So, now is the saddest time of the retreat. Your last talk. That is why we like taking the photographs, the group photographs of my retreats in the middle of the retreat, when everyone is happy. Because if we took the photograph this afternoon, you'd all be sad. You have to go home now. That's why even these very strict retreats, I always wonder when they took the photographs, they were all smiling and happy. And until I figured out, they always take those photographs on those long, really tough retreats at the very end. They're all happy because they're going home now. So, on these retreats, hopefully the happiness is there all the time, because without happiness there is no meditation. One of the great teachings of the Buddha, Sukhino Chittang Samadhiyati, through happiness, the mind becomes still. So when you have this beautiful happiness, the joy, where everything is just all that you would ever need. You had a good breakfast, a nice warm place to sit, a nice cuddly monk or a teddy bear, whichever you want. That makes you happy and joyful. And when you're happy and joyful, it's very easy to let things go and to be peaceful, to be still. But sometimes in life it's so hard to be happy. When things go wrong in your life, when you get divorced, when somebody dies, but it really depends in life just how you look on it. You can think, oh, I'm getting divorced. Or you can think, yeah, free at last, woohoo! You can think, oh, I've lost my job. I just went away for a week and the boss has sacked me when you go back to work. You think, oh dear. And you can say, yes, I can become a monk or a nun now. You can be told that you've got cancer and you're dying, and you can get very, very, very upset. Or you can think, yes, I'm going to heaven soon. It's really up to you, your attitudes which you have to life, the way you perceive it. That is what you have full control over. You can't control much of life. Sometimes the bosses do this and do that. Sometimes economies go up, economies go down. Sometimes, you know, your health is this way and then your health is that way. Sometimes you can't control the world. You know, just the last few days, how hard it is to control your body and mind in meditation. But what you can always do is let it be. You can always not fight. You can always make peace, and you can always, every time, you can always be kind, and you can always smile, no matter what's happening. There's a very, very, very old poem I remember from the time I was a youth. It's easy enough to be happy when life goes along. Was it? I forgot it now. Old age, you know, sometimes it crashes off on you. That's right. It's easy enough to be happy when life goes along like a song. But the one worthwhile is the one who can smile when everything goes all wrong. And that's a nice thing. Can you smile when everything goes wrong? Can you be happy when you go to the airport tomorrow or the next day and you find your flight has been cancelled? Can you be happy when you find out that your husband you left over in Hong Kong or Jakarta has run away with your best friend and spent all your money? Can you be happy no matter what happens? You might as well, you can't change it. But you can always smile and be happy. That's why I always like Dr. Kesavi Dhammananda. I remember seeing his doctor after he died, and the doctor told me personally that's the only monk, only person he's ever known, when he was told that he was going to die. The doctor said, your cancer is terminal. He's the only one who laughed. Now that's a monk. That's a real disciple of the Buddha. You say, you've got cancer, you've only got a few days to live. Ha 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 ha. Can you do that? I remember this one guy, he went to see the doctor and the doctor said, your cancer is terminal. And of course, the first question you ask is, how long do I have? And the doctor replied, 10. He said, 10 what? 10 months? 10 weeks? 9, 8, 7. That's terminal. But a lot of life, again, you can't change, but why not be happy with it? And that is the choice you always have. That is your freedom as a human being. And it's one of the things which we teach in Buddhism. It's incredible. When you have shit, whoopee, more fertilizer for my mango tree. When things go wrong, the old stories of mosquitoes in Thailand, my teacher said, that's your Ajahn, now that's your teacher. Ajahn mosquito. And you learn so much from that. So whenever anything does go wrong, don't worry about it, learn from it. And when things go right in life, well done, you can enjoy it. So this is a very simple teaching in life. When life goes right, it's your good karma. You're enjoying your stay here. Wonderful. And don't say, oh, this is just too nice, the food is too good, the place, the rooms are too comfortable. No. You deserve that. Your karma meant you have a very wonderful time here. But if it's too cold, why was that? Because your karma. You deserve that too. I always like, whatever you get in life, you deserve. So don't blame your wife, don't blame your husband, don't blame the economy. You deserve this. And that way, good or bad, we don't argue, we don't get upset. But the other thing you realize with insight, that doesn't matter how bad it gets, it doesn't last. When you do go through the difficult times of life, just like Ajahn Chah said when I was sick, Baba Wang, so you'll get better or you'll die. It's so true. Doesn't matter how sad you are, you know, it won't last. It'll either get worse or it'll get better. It never stays the same. And you find the whole of life is like that. And sooner or later you discover that those things which most people call happiness, that thing which most people call happiness and pleasure is just a gap, a pause between moments of suffering. I always was wondering about what most people think as pleasure. Some of your most pleasurable moments in your life, when you say finish university, those of you who went to university, you see all those young graduates throwing their caps into the air, partying, having a wonderful time. Where did their happiness come from? Because all of the suffering of having to do assignments and examinations. You see, when people actually win some competition, like the World Soccer Cup, which is still on, one team is going to celebrate. And why will they celebrate? Because of all the teams which have lost. Their happiness is a measure of the suffering of all the teams who didn't make it. So much of life is like that. I often remember the most healthy I ever felt was when I came out of hospital after being sick for a few weeks. I never felt so healthy as when I could compare it to the pain which has just left. So much of life is like that. Some of the happinesses you experience are just trials, tribulations, which have just finished. Now, many, many, many years ago, I was at the old Perth airport, waiting for a monk to come. And on the same flight, some people came in earlier. They were refugees from Iran. And when they came through, you know, into the public area, they literally jumped up and punched the air in joy. One after the other, 5, 10, 15, 20, and by the time the 20th one was jumping up and punching the air, I found myself punching the air too. And I thought, hang on, I'm not a refugee. And the joy was contagious. And I thought afterwards, why are those people so happy? It was because of all the suffering they had endured for the last 3 or 4 years, you know, in the Islamic Revolution in Iran, having to leave their homes and everything they owned, many of them not making it, getting captured, tortured, killed, living in refugee camps for years on end, and finally making it to freedom. The happiness which I saw was a measure of all the suffering they'd endured over the years before. And that was one of the times I realized that what most of us take as happiness in life is just a result of all the suffering which has ended. Why, when you finish school, yes, I'm free at last. Why? because of all the suffering of having to work hard, study, and get through those exams. Sometimes, Friday evening, you finished work, yeah, weekend. Why is that a happy time? Because of all the suffering which went before. Why is a wedding supposed to be the happiest time of a woman or man's life? It's because of all the suffering which went before trying to find a spouse, and all the suffering which is going to come afterwards. Happiness is just a pause between two moments of suffering. So it's nice to actually see that, which means when you are suffering, you always know it won't last, it can't last, it's impossible to last. Soon the cold will go and it'll get warm. And in a few day or two, I'm not quite sure when you're flying back, you'll be complaining about how hot Jakarta is. Oh, this is too hot. Because these things never actually stay the same. So when you understand, whenever you have any difficulties in life, always remember it passes. That's why the famous Emperor's Ring story. Some of these are such simple stories, and they're in the books. Many people know them, but they forget them, which is one of the reasons why they have difficulties in life. That's one of those really lovely stories. An emperor, he ascended to the throne when he was very young, so he didn't really have much experience of life and had to rule a whole kingdom. And of course, you know, he didn't do a very good job at first. Every time there was prosperity in the kingdom and happiness and harmony, the economy was going well, he would just hold parties and celebrations, which meant he really wasn't doing all that much work. So the good times and prosperity never lasted that long. And when there was problems in the kingdom, you know, riots, demonstrations, rising crime, and the economy was very, very bad and people out of work, when things were going badly in his kingdom, he just got so depressed, he stayed in his room and sulked for most of the day, depressed and upset, which meant he wasn't doing any work in the bad times either, which means the bad times in the kingdom lasted longer than they should. And it's very hard to teach somebody, especially if they're a king. If you say the wrong word, you lose your head. So the ministers were very smart. They went to a goldsmith, they made a ring and presented it to the young emperor, which was a simple gold ring, except for the words which were engraved on the outside of the ring. This too will pass. And the king wore that ring all the time. So that whenever there was bad times in the kingdom, he'd always look, this too will pass. He knew it would. That's one of the things which, no matter what religion, faith you have, we all know that that is an absolute truth. Which meant that he gave him hope. It will pass. Which meant he never got depressed. Which meant he worked even in the difficult, dark times of the kingdom. Which meant those dark days never lasted as long as people expected. Things got better, because even when things were going wrong, he still had hope, energy, motivation, and would work hard. As I remember the story, someone, you know, who was coming from the Northern Hemisphere, Hong Kong, you may understand this, maybe not in Indonesia, but if ever you go to a Northern Hemisphere during the winter time, especially to the country where I grew up in England, during the winter time, there's no leaves on the trees. There's no life. There's no flowers. Everything is dormant in the cold. And you think that everything is dead, which is like that in the winter time. But even though it seems that there's no life, there's no color, there's no brightness in the world in the north, in the northern winters of our planet, still you know that under the ground, there's all these seeds. All these bulbs just waiting for the weather to warm before they push up their life. And of course, when the spring comes in those northern hemisphere lands, when the spring comes, it bursts with life. And the dark winter days change to this beautiful, warm, vibrant springtime. And that's just like our life. We all go through the winters of our life. Times when things aren't going well, times when we get depressed, times when we can see no hope at all. But we always remember, just like those northern hemisphere, under the surface, things are just waiting for the right conditions to burst forth. Beauty, life, joy, happiness comes out again. But only for a while, and the winter comes again. That's our life. And when we understand this too will pass, it means when things are going badly, we know, oh, it doesn't matter, it won't last. Keep on going. So when people get sick, you know, it won't last. You either get better or you die, it won't last. And if you die, you get reborn again, get a much better body next time. And if you've got an old car, do you keep it going at all costs? No, you trade it in and get a new one. Just like your old body. But the most important thing with a car is make sure you've got a good insurance policy. Because if you've got a good insurance policy and if your car crashes, breaks down, then you can't afford a new one. Maybe all you can get is a bicycle or a skateboard if you're lucky. Because you haven't got a good insurance. If you've got a really good insurance policy, then when your car breaks down or gets stolen or it sort of crashes, if you've got a really good insurance, you can get even a better car next time. So what is the insurance policy of life? Good karma. So make sure your karma premiums are kept up. You keep always making good karma so that when this body crashes and dies and blows up, you can get a much better one next time. Otherwise, you get an old bomb of a body next time, as they say. A rattly old body. I don't know which country. But this is actually learning just that when things go wrong, you can always do something. And when things go right, when you're having a happy time, now this is the most important. When things are going well, please never take it for granted. If you are healthy, don't think, oh, I'm healthy now, I'm fine, I don't need to do anything anymore. No, just keep looking after your health. And when you're happy, don't think, oh, I'm happy now, all the problems are gone. No, you have to keep working hard. Whenever you're happy, content, things are going well in your life, remember, this too will pass too. So please work hard to keep it going. Maintain it. So your happiness and health and prosperity last longer than anyone would ever imagine. It's all like putting in that effort. Learning how to do these things. When it's time to rest, rest. When it's time to do things, do things. One of his friends, years and years ago, he came to tell me the story of his meeting with Ajahn Chah. And some monks, you know, they can just give one or two little pieces of advice and that's all you need for your whole life. And this is what happened to this man. He heard of this monk Ajahn Chah in the northeast of Thailand. He lived in Sydney, went all the way to Thailand to see Ajahn Chah. That only just to see him, nothing else, not to go touring around. And eventually he managed to get to Ajahn Chah's monastery. This was shortly before Ajahn Chah had his stroke and couldn't teach anymore. And by this time Ajahn Chah was really, really famous. So he couldn't even get close to Ajahn Chah. You know, sometimes you try and see me in Indonesia, it's impossible. You know, you've done that, seen all these hundreds of people wanting photographs, signing books. It's really nice here. You can come up and have a chat, come to interviews, it's very easy. If you'd have seen me in Sri Lanka a month ago, it'd be impossible to get close to me. I had to have these people trying to push people away so I could actually walk out of the place. It was mayhem. Now I know what it's like to be Mick Jagger. I always wanted to be like But Mick Jagger, the difference between Mick Jagger and me is Mick Jagger couldn't get any satisfaction. I get lots of satisfaction. I'm a mug. Anyway, just... So you get really nice and close, which is very, very nice. Now, what was the story? Oh, yes. So this guy, he couldn't get close to Ajahn Chah. He went all the way just to ask questions, and there was hundreds of people around this monk. And after sitting there for 2 or 3 hours waiting, he realized, no hope, waste of time. So he got up and left. And he realized there was another hour or two before his taxi would come to take him back to the airport to fly him to Bangkok and then back to Australia again. Really disappointed all that way for one thing, and he couldn't manage to achieve his goal. And realizing it was another hour to go, there were some monks were sweeping the grounds. And so he thought, I might as well do some good karma. That's really important. Don't just wait for things to happen. Make them happen by doing good karma. Sweep the grounds. Wash up. Do something. And you always find if you do something like that, you get really good results back. So what happened? He was sweeping and he felt a hand on his shoulder. And of course, you know who that hand belonged to. He turned around and it was Ajahn Chah. These monks, they're very, very wise and they read people's minds. Ajahn Chah knew this Westerner had come all this way and needed some little piece of advice. So Ajahn Chah actually got up and went towards that Westerner, not waiting for him to get his chance. Ajahn Chah made the chance for him. And he just gave the simple piece of advice. And this man said that advice was worth coming 3 or 4 times around the world for. And all it was if you're going to sweep, give it everything you've got. And then Ajahn Chah went away. And he realized it's not just sweeping. It's, you know, if you are working at your job. If you're at your job, give it everything you've got. Just be right there. When you're with your family, give your family everything you've got. Don't worry about the work tomorrow. When you're sleeping, give sleep everything you've got. Don't worry about the following morning, what you have to do next, or where you come from earlier today. Give sleep everything you've got. When you're meditating, everything you've got in meditation. When you're playing and enjoying yourself, give it everything you've got. Whatever you do in life, don't keep anything back for another time. Now is the only time you have. So give this moment everything you've got. And he took that back with him. His business flourished. Really did very well because he knew how to put energy into the moment. Giving this moment everything he had. His family had a wonderful family. Because when he was with his kids, he gave them everything he had. He never kept back anything for later on. When he was with his wife. When he was resting. Very simple advice. But how many of us, when we're meditating, we think, oh, we've got to go out this afternoon, we're going to go to the nuns' monastery. When you're in the nuns' monastery, you're thinking, oh, we're going to go to the city centre afterwards. You're never really here, never giving this moment everything you have. And even when you're meditating, you're thinking of lunch. And what are we going to have today for lunch? So that's a very simple piece of advice. Whatever you do in life, give it 100% everything you have. Simple teaching. And even when you're sick, give sickness everything you've got. See how sick you can be. Lay in your bed, I'm sick. Whoa, yeah, we can do better than this. Come on, be really sick. Because for me, sickness is a great gift of compassion. You're giving all these people who care for you the opportunity to make merit with you. The Buddha said, the one who looks after the sick looks after the Buddha. So you say, here I am, husband, I'm sick. Regard me as a Buddha. Look after me. And it's really cute and sweet to see how people look after each other when they're sick. It brings out some of the very best in human nature. People taking time off, coming to visit you, bringing you flowers, bringing you all the food that you like. I can never forget this man. He was in a hospice over here in Perth. He was dying, end of his life, had cancer. But because he was dying, because the doctors gave up on him, when he went to this hospice, they said, well, you're going to die anyway. You can eat whatever you like. Well, I don't have to watch my cholesterol. No, of course not. You're going to die. So eat as much fatty food as you like. You can put butter on your bacon. But what about my diabetes? Are you going to die soon? Cancer's going to kill you, not the diabetes. So you can have 20 spoons of sugar in your tea. Go for it, whatever you want. And he said that was the first time in years he could enjoy his food. No doctor, no wife was telling him, that's bad for you, that's bad for you. I'm dying anyway, so it doesn't matter anymore. And he was having all this delicious food, things which he really liked, which he hadn't eaten for years. And he got better and left the hospice. True story. They say, well, it don't happen to cancer. You look pretty good. Off you go. He went back 6 months later and died properly. But, you know, that time, just enjoying himself, having the food he liked because he was going to die anyway, that actually gave him enough energy and happiness. He started to get better. So sometimes you wonder about these doctors saying, that's bad for you, that's bad for you, that's bad for you. Happiness is good for you. So please enjoy a bit of life. If you have that happiness. People keep telling me, Ajahn Brahm, what are you eating? You eat this and eat that. Greasy food, fish and chips, condensed milk in my tea. But don't worry. Because I did see this medical report. I think I've got it in my room. I keep all of these just to prove that what I'm saying is absolutely true. This is science proven, experiments repeated. When you're happy, when you laugh, the arteries and veins, your blood vessels expand. They see that. When you're happy and you laugh, your blood vessels get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. But when you get angry, when you get miserable, when you complain, your blood vessels get smaller and smaller and smaller. So, if you want to eat more greasy food, if you want to have more gut going through your blood vessels, laugh. Be happy. And then like me, my blood vessels, I've laughed for such a long time. My blood vessels are so wide. They're so big for all that laughter and happiness for many years. Anything can go through there. And it never gets clogged. So, that answered one of the great mysteries of life. Why is it that fat people are always happy? They are, aren't they? Have a look. People who are chubby are always in a good mood, always fat and happy. Santa Claus has been living for hundreds of years. He's fat, ho 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 ho. Always happy, he hasn't died yet. Ho ho ho, yes, very good. So why is that? It's because the happiness actually makes you healthier. And it means the fat, miserable ones, they died a long time ago. The only ones left are the fat, happy ones. So if you have any cholesterol problems or diabetes or any health problems, you better start laughing quick. Otherwise it's going to kill you. So that degree of a little bit of happiness is what you get when you put everything you've got into what you're doing. And you find you're a happier person, also a healthier person. And meditation teaches you how to do that. Just relaxing and letting go, taking away this terrible, what I call the fault-finding mind. You know, so much of life is in problems. When we just have so much fault-finding. The food is not hot enough. There's not enough chili. There's not enough salt. This place is too cold. The rooms are too comfortable. People talk too much. And Ajahn Brahm keeps telling the same stories over and over again. Whatever it is with fault finding, that is the problem. So instead of finding faults with things, we actually train our mind to see the beauty in things. The two bad bricks in the wall. Now don't go and ask, where are the two bad bricks in the wall in Bodhinyana Monastery? I haven't seen them yet. You can't come to Perth without seeing the famous wall with the two bad bricks. Actually, after I wrote that story, I'd actually forgotten where they were. Because they actually disappeared from my consciousness. Because they weren't a problem anymore. And I went looking for them, and I think I found them, I think in the ablution block. The monks' toilets. So you can't go in there. They're in there somewhere. But that's the two bad bricks story. And that was such a revelation about how we always focus on faults in life. My two bad bricks. There was such an eyesore for me that I wanted to destroy the wall until someone told me what's above, below, to the left and right of those bad bricks. And how much of life is like that? We focus on a couple of mistakes and want to destroy the whole wall. A couple of mistakes in our partner, we want to divorce them. Split up. A couple of mistakes in ourselves, we want to commit suicide. And that's just stupid attitude. Instead of actually seeing the two bad bricks, see the beautiful bricks. So, have you had a good meditation retreat? He said, no, I never got jhana. That's a stupid brick. Don't focus on that one. Were you peaceful and happy? Are you relaxed? How about developing a mind which sees only the positive, the beauty? You know, in the retreat, in the people you've shared the last few days with, in the cooks, in the kangaroos, in the cockroaches you've seen crawling around on the kitchen floor. There are only two bad cockroaches. The rest of them. Whatever it is you see, just don't be so fault-finding. And then when you can see the other part of life, it's so easy to be happy and appreciative. And some of you have said, oh, it's so hard to be appreciative of myself, because we've been trained only to see the two bad bricks in ourselves. The thought, I'm a hopeless muck. I'm too fat. I can't even keep my robe on properly. After 40 years of being a monk, this is as much as you can do, Ajahn Brahm. It's so easy if you really want to get depressed. Anyone can get depressed. But can anyone just put that aside and see the beauty in their life? And all their wonderful goodness. You have all done incredibly well. Just coming here for a few days. Keeping precepts. Meditating, listening to Dhamma. Not many people could come here. Sometimes people come and they can't stay. You've made it. Well done. Say, wow, I've been on a retreat. Retreat with a famous monk. Not just with one monk, with many famous monks, with many famous nuns. Wow, I am so lucky. If you think like that, then all the mistakes you've made, all the times you've slept in, all the times you've ate in the evening, all the times you've just broken all the rules, probably every which one was here, you've probably broken one. So what? You've been very, very kind. And that's enough. So never look at the faults. Never look at the faults in your meditation. Only look at the beauty in the meditation. Never think of the times you've fallen asleep or fantasized. Think of the times when it was a little bit peaceful. And feel good about that. It's a fault-finding mind which causes the negativity which causes most of the problems in this world. Appreciation, gratitude, seeing the beauty in simple things is a cause of happiness. There's so much happiness available in this world, so much joy, so much beauty. But you know, a person is really upset, you know, because their partner is divorcing them or their children are causing them trouble. They can obsess about that and can't even see the kangaroos or the rabbits or the sunsets in this place. They can't see anything. Which brings me on to one of the other similes. How big is my hand? How big is my hand? You know, my hand is now so big I can't see any of you. I can't see the sunset, I can't see the kangaroos, I can't see lunch, I can't see anything. All I can see is my hand. Is it my hand's problem? Or is it because I've lost perspective? When I put my hand where it belongs, at the end of my arm, it hasn't got any smaller. Same size, but now it's in where it belongs, at the end of my arm. I can still see my hand, I can see every one of you as well. I can see the beautiful sunshine coming through the walls. I can see just the lunch coming up later on. When you get perspective, you find all the problems in life, they don't get smaller. They don't disappear. They just get perspective now. It's just two bad bricks in a wall, that's all. It's just a hand on the end of my arm. It's just a cancer, that's all. It's just a divorce, that's all. It's just losing a job, that's all. It's not a big thing. The hand on the end, you can see so much other stuff. But that is what we get through wisdom. And that wisdom just comes from where? From the silence. From the meditation. From just being here. Because that's where I got all this wisdom. I didn't study psychology. I studied theoretical physics. Nothing to do with psychology. You learn all this stuff with a quiet and peaceful mind. So if you carry on doing your meditation, then when you get home, that wisdom will keep on increasing. And you'll understand what the monks are talking about, what the nuns are talking about. Why? We can find out these amazing truths which help people. But when you go home, people often ask, how much should I meditate when I go home? You know my answer? Is meditate the same number of minutes and hours every day as you spend eating. If you eat three or four times a day, then meditate three or four times a day. If you may eat seven times a day, like these Singaporeans, I thought this executive retreat in Penang last June, I think it was, March, yeah. Executive retreat in March is supposed to be, you know, five precepts. You know, just you have the breakfast, you have the lunch, and a snack in the evening. Just a snack. Yeah, big joke, snack. It was a full, I don't know how many course dinner these people had. And that was not all. They had arranged to have like a morning tea. And a morning tea, I always thought, you know, English, maybe a cup of tea and a couple of biscuits. No, spring rolls, noodles, the works. They just had breakfast, I give a talk, morning tea, and then they did some, I don't know how they meditated, they probably all fell asleep with people. And then they had their lunch, and after lunch, a bit more meditation, and then afternoon tea, the same again. And then they had dinner, so the dinner was the fifth meal. And then after the dinner, then I gave the evening talk and the questions and answers. And I went to bed. Did they go to bed? No way. They went to the hawker stores for supper. It was Penang. They love Penang food. They had six or seven meals a day. So I said, okay, that's fair enough. That's what you like. So if you have six meals a day, six meditates a day. I don't mean just 1 minute. How long do you spend eating? The amount of time you spend eating, spend that amount of time meditating. And the result of that is you meditate more and you end eating less. But whatever, keep on doing the meditation because that's the main thing. You get your mind peaceful and calm. It's so popular these days, people meditating. It solves all sorts of problems. And I think one of the stories, I don't know if I've told this story to you guys for a while now, about the old sailor and the professor. Yeah, some of you know, but a lot of you don't. This is about the importance of meditation. A long time ago, before the days of Cathay Pacific and Garuda, when people would go from Hong Kong to Australia, they'd go in a boat, one of these big passenger liners. And these were the days of those boats. And there was a professor. A professor from Hong Kong was travelling to Australia. And that professor, on the first night at sea, after dinner, he went up on the deck of the boat, you know, just for a stroll. And on the deck of the boat, he saw this ancient sailor, this old man who was on watch. And he thought he'd strike up a conversation with this old sailor. And he saw the old sailor looking up at the starry heavens. You know, like here, when it's not cloudy, the sky at night is beautiful here. And he went up to that sailor and said, "What a beautiful starry night." The sailor said, "Yes, it's wonderful." And the professor said, "You know, being a sailor, you use these stars before the time of GPS. You use the stars to navigate and find your way through the oceans. All those years, how long have you been at sea?" And the old man said, "I've been at sea ever since I was a boy. 60 or 70 years I've been at sea." "Wow," said the professor, "you must know so much about astronomy." And the old sailor said, "What? About astronomy, the stars?" He said, "I don't know anything about those stars. I just look at them at night. That's all." "What? All those years at sea and you never bothered to learn about the heavens above you? You stupid old man. What a waste of a life. I'm not going to talk to this idiot anymore." and the professor walked away in disgust. The next night at sea, it was such a delicious dinner was served. The professor was in such a good mood. When he took a stroll on deck, he forgot all about what he said to the old man the night before. And he went up to the old man who was looking over the railings into the ocean and said, "Old man, being a sailor for so many years, you must know a lot about the life in the ocean and the currents and everything which goes on and swims under your boat. You must have seen amazing creatures. You must be an expert on marine science." "What?" said the old man. "What's marine science?" "The study of everything which is under the ocean." "Don't know anything about that. All I know is the ocean's wet and salty, that's all." "What? All those years at sea and you never learned, picked up a book to learn about the ocean on which you sail? You stupid old man, you stupid old man, what a waste of a life." And he went off in a huff the third night at sea. Don't worry, it doesn't go on that much longer. The third night at sea, the cook surpassed himself and the dinner was absolutely delicious. And it was such a beautiful night on the ocean. This very soft breeze was floating over the ocean. And the old man was enjoying just the balmy breeze from the ocean. And the old man said, "I'll give you one more chance." And he said, "What a beautiful night at sea." "Yes," said the old man. And the professor said, "Actually, that I am a professor of meteorology. I'm going to Hong Kong to give a series of lectures on the weather. You may not know about the stars above you or the ocean underneath you, but you certainly must know about the weather. Because if there is a big storm at sea, you know, it might sort of destroy your boat. It might just blow you off course for days. You certainly must know about the weather systems. And maybe we can compare some notes. Maybe I might learn something from your experience. What do you know about meteorology?" And the old sailor said, "Meteor, what?" "Meteorology, the study of the weather." "Never heard about that," said the old man. "I don't know anything about the weather." "What?" said the professor. "All those years at sea, you never bothered to learn about the winds and the storms and the rains and the currents. You stupid old man! I'm never going to talk to you ever again. What a waste of a life." And he stormed off. And the next night at sea, the professor never had any dinner because it was one of those very rough nights at sea. And the professor, he suffered seasickness. He knew if he ate anything, he would throw it up. So he stayed in his cabin all night. And as it got later and later on into the night, the boat started to rock more and more. The storm at sea got worse and worse. And as it got worse and worse, he got more and more scared. And he got really terrified when he heard a terrible bang! I always say, whenever you give a talk, don't just talk the same tone. Excite people. Give them heart attacks. Bang! And everything went quiet as the ship shuddered. And the next few seconds, he heard people starting to run and scream, running right outside his cabin door. He opened the cabin door, and who was running outside? The old sailor. And the old sailor stopped. He looked at the old professor. "Professor, in all those years you've lived, have you ever learnt about swimming?" Professor said, "Actually, no. You stupid old professor, what a waste of a life. The ship is sinking." And the moral of that story is, if you are going to go in a boat, yeah, it's nice to know about meteorology and astronomy and marine science, but the most important thing to know if you're going in a boat, is how to swim. The most important thing to know in life is how to keep your head above water. In all the turbulent storms of your life, how to swim, how to meditate, how to be peaceful, even though there's a storm in your life. That is the most important thing. So forget about all the other stuff you learn in life. Just like the old sailor and the professor. Professor drowned. Old sailor survived because he knew what was important in life. And it's true, that idea of keeping your head above water in the turbulent times of your life. We all go through stuff. Was it a few years ago I got excommunicated from my monastery in Thailand for ordaining you guys? Oh, sorry, you girls. And you always go through difficult things in life, but what do you do when you meditate? You can always keep your head above water. When you go through your sicknesses, when you go through your financial difficulties, when the traumas of your life come up at you like this incredible tsunami, what do? You meditate, and you're fine. When there's nothing to do, do nothing. Such a simple teaching. And then life changes. It's amazing how when people get in crisis, they don't know how to relax and do nothing. When you've only got a few days to live, what do? Don't go rushing around with your bucket list. I can't understand this bucket list people have these days. They have all these things they have to do before they die. Don't worry about that. Just throw away your bucket list. That's where you get the term, kicking the bucket list, dying. Give it away. So what do you want to do before you die? So I said, do you want to see Niagara Falls? Go to your shower. Turn it on. Water. See the Great Wall of China? Go to Bodhinyana Monastery. The Grand Canyon. There's been enough erosion just in front of Daniel's Kut. You can see some of the big canyons from the erosion there. What do you want to go and do these things for? So instead, you want to go and see London, see Big Ben? That's the same thing as a clock. So a lot of times that we waste our time because we don't know what's really important in life. And sometimes the most important thing to learn in life is how to do nothing. How to relax and be at peace when there's nothing you can do. Because too often in life, when there really is nothing you can do, people don't know how to do nothing. And they go struggling and squirming and they make matters much, much, much more worse. But here when you meditate, you learn how just to relax. When everything's going all wrong, when your mind is going crazy, when your body is falling apart, when everything is just all over the place, when you get to the airport and you find your plane is cancelled, and all your appointments which you have are all going to be lost. Never mind. Nothing you can do about it. So, learn how to do nothing. Relax. Once you can do that, it's amazing just how successful you are in life. One of the great stories in The Opening Door of Your Heart was the one about the soldiers. One of my elder teacher friends who was a soldier in the British Army during the Second World War. Just a volunteer, not really a professional killer. Everyone had to join up, and he found himself in Burma in the Second World War. In a real war with people shooting real bullets at you. And he was in the jungles with a patrol, and a scout came back to tell them they had wandered into a huge number of Japanese troops. They were completely surrounded, heavily outnumbered. He thought this was his end. This was Second World War. Japanese troops surrounding a small number of British troops, totally outnumbered. And people tell me in such situations you never know who the real hero is. He decided to be the hero. He said, let's fight our way out. Even if none of us make it, we'll take a lot of the enemy with us. It's called the Bruce Willis strategy. Absolutely ridiculous. Works in Hollywood, but in real life, no. So he was going to be the hero, but the captain said, no, we will not fight our way out. Instead, said the captain of the small number of British soldiers, we will all sit down, and that's an order, and have a cup of tea. And he couldn't believe his words. What? Have a cup of tea when you're at a war, about to die? The most ridiculous thing, but it was an order. And anyway, it was the British Army. That's what they do. You know, you're Hong Kong, you know the British Army. Have a cup of tea at any old time, even when you're about to die. So he thought it was the most stupid order he'd ever had. But he had to follow it. Have a cup of tea, make a cup of tea when you're about to die, surrounded by the enemy in the jungles of Burma. And before they finished their tea, the scout came back and said, the enemy's moved. There's a way through. Put everything away. Move quietly. We can all escape. And they all did, which is why he could tell me the story. And he said he owed the wisdom to the captain, who knew how to do nothing when they were all about to die. Just to sit down and relax and wait. Because life is always changing. There may be nothing you can do right now, but most people don't know how to do nothing. They waste their energy, make things worse. If you can only learn how to sit still, do nothing, have a cup of tea, a cup of noodles, whatever you like, a cup of coffee, sit down and do nothing, and wait. And when life does change, as it always does, now you're ready. You're ready to take the opportunity and escape. Which he did, and he said he'd done that many other times in his life too. He said he had bad cancer, nothing you could do. So he just relaxed and did nothing and had lots of tea. Financial difficulties, crisis, don't know how you're going to pay your debts. Nothing you can do. Sit down, have a cup of tea. Wait for things to change. Because things always do change. Opportunities come from where you don't know, but they come. And then there's something you can do. So here, hopefully, you started to learn how to do nothing. Waste of time, you're not going to get enlightened. So just sit down and do nothing. And then you might even get enlightened. So this is how we learn here. So all the little techniques, all the stuff which you've learned here, it's not just, you know, to become an arahat, perfectly enlightened, not get reborn again, understand what the Buddha is. Yeah, that's part of it. But it's also how to live life. And we teach both here because there's no difference between the two. And that means that it doesn't matter how far you get on the spiritual life, it does enhance your worldly life as well. You do become better workers, better husbands, better wives, better children, better parents. You do become better people no matter what work you do. More able to keep your head above water in the turbulent storms of life. And that's really impressive when you see that. And all the same time, becoming a more peaceful, happy, successful human being, you're also learning the Dhamma of how to let go, to be totally at peace, to be happy, to let go of suffering, understand Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path, a whole lot in a single package. What a deal.